the power of narrative, when we're talking about narrative, we're talking about a narrative story that's narrated by a storyteller. Examples of that would be the media, when we get a talking head telling you something. Sometimes there are theatrical productions with just a monologue. Somebody gets on stage and they speak, and that's the entire production. Or alternatively, there's a narrator. It's not a particularly common style, but it's a thing. And it's how human beings are designed to pass information on from one to another. Not only that, it also seems to be deeply genetically embedded. There are very specific stories that are found among primitive people, no matter where they are in the world. There was a lot of study done by a great literary researcher by the name of Joseph Campbell, who went around the world and spoke to primitive people. He spoke to people in Australasia, in the Americas, in Africa, and Asia. And he looked at their myths. He also looked at the more modern myths, the biblical stories and so on, and the Mahabharata and the Bhagavad Gita and the Tao Te Ching, and they have common threads. He identified these common threads, and he identified what are known as archetypes, essentially a character, the wizard or the sage, the hero, the princess, these kind of characters. Archetypes appear in these stories throughout the world. And not only that, some of the stories are the same. And very specifically, he's famous for the construction of a thing known as the hero's story. And the hero's story is a story of, it could be a male or female hero, a venture into an unknown land. They have struggles and encounter suffering. They learn something that transforms them, and it's transformative, and then they bring it back, and then they pass it on. They pass on this knowledge, they pass on this skill, what they've learned, what they've acquired in their heroic journey. And there are a number of other narratives as well. And very often, when stories are told in the modern world, so they're told by the media, for example, they're told as a simple heroes and villains story. And of course, who gets nominated as the hero? They're the people for whom there's the greatest financial benefit to the media. So irrespective of that, we also have a history. And for instance, if you were to look at British history, you would see that our heroes are seen as villains in the histories of other countries. It is all a thing of perspective. But irrespective of that, the stories are repeated, and this process goes on, this process of passing on information with stories. If you look at Aesop's fables and children's stories, morality tales, tomes, they usually have some moral message in them to impart. And we accept that, we adopt a narrative. And some of these narratives are very powerful and very useful. And they tell us about human nature, they tell us about our relationship to others, they tell us about ourselves, actually. So what happens is we very often identify ourselves in one of these stories. And so then what we do is we adopt that narrative. We identify with the narrative. We might identify with some archetype in it, or we might identify that archetype as someone in our life. And so then what happens is we accept that story into our own personal story. And as we go through this little series, what we'll be doing is looking at the power of the narratives and how deeply embedded they are in our consciousness. We'll be looking at our personal narratives and how they're formed, how they get created, and how they change, and the power of our narratives. And then finally, we'll be looking at what power we have over our narratives. That's the key to all of this. And that's something that I'll be covering in the next few classes. The obvious import of this from our perspective as meditators is two things. One is there's the inner narrative. We become aware of our inner narrative. In fact, awareness of the narrative is actually part of meditation. And then most importantly, we become aware of the narrative in the minds of others. And then we notice the response in our mind to their narrative. And then when we communicate with them, we'll notice a response from them based on their narrative. And this narrative transmission, creation, transmission, and adoption and acceptance is how groups form. What happens is we share our narratives and we identify the commonalities. And then we feel less alone, we feel more connected to that group, to those individuals. And then we adopt that narrative and we find that we will then repeat it ourselves. And this is actually how humanity is, and this is how we're designed to teach and to learn. And this is how our brain responds to external experience with thought as a narrative in our mind. And the meditations that we'll be doing are the same sort of meditations that I normally teach, just taught from the perspective of observing a narrative. On Saturday, what we did was some counting practice, counting the breaths. And what counting the breaths does is we're using the narrator, the internal thinker of the thoughts, the voice in our head, to do the counting. Human beings seem to be split up into two groups, one for whom the counting meditation is one of the first meditations that helps them to calm their mind, and the others for whom noting thought is a practice that helps them to calm their mind. These are the foundational practices that I teach on the course and that I teach regularly, because they're the basics that we need to keep going back to. So if you'd just like to get yourselves comfortable, what we'll do is we'll spend a little time today in our meditations with an awareness of the narrator, the inner dialogue, and how we become familiar and comfortable with it, which is what meditation's all about. And to notice the mind, to become familiar with the mind, and then to become comfortable with the mind, we have to be present. Because if we're in that story, we're not aware of it. What we'll do today is begin by opening our awareness to our entire body, very gently and very softly, letting into our awareness whatever sensations the body chooses to bring to our attention. If there's discomfort anywhere, and I know for some of you that there will be, the tendency of the mind will be to draw your awareness to that discomfort. And we're not trying to avoid it. But what we're doing is allowing into our awareness the neutral sensations from the other parts of the body. So let's say my back hurts. If I just focus on my back, I'm in a world of pain. If I open my awareness to an awareness from the arms and the legs and the torso and the face and the head, assuming there's no discomfort there, then the discomfort from the back is not my sole focus. I'm opening up my focus and my awareness to the entire body. And of course, we notice the breath rising and falling. Wherever we're in contact with the ground, we might have our feet on the floor, we might be lying down, we might be leaning back. We're aware of gravity pushing us down. There's the sensation of our contact with wherever we're sitting or standing or lying. There's also the sensation of our contact with the ambient air. And we're aware of any coolness or warmth. We're aware of sensations in the body other than wherever there's discomfort. If there's discomfort, we're aware of, say I have a bad back again, I can be aware of the sensations in my hands, in my face, in my eyes, in my shoulders, in my legs, in my feet. So we're aware of the body and we're aware of the breath. noticing the breath. And we're aware of the rising and falling of the belly. And we're checking in with our posture as well. We want the head balanced as comfortably as possible. We want to incrementally release tension from the hands. Most easily achieved by the chin mudra, which is placing the fingertip and the thumb tip, first fingertip and the thumb tip, very, very gently in contact. So gently that you could slide a cigarette paper between them. We simply focus our attention on that contact. And at the center of all of this, the center of the posture, the center of the entire body, the connection of the body to its environment and the sensory experience of the body, right at the center of this is the breath, rising and falling. We can bring our attention to the breath in the nostrils. And notice the synchronization between the breath in the nostrils and the breath in the belly. Just checking to see if they're out of sync. The belly rises. And we breathe in through the nostrils. Belly falls. We breathe out and it's warmer. Rising, a cooler breath in the nostrils. Falling, a warmer breath in the nostrils. And now we're going to enlist the inner dialogue. We're going to use it for a mantra. This is the most fundamental mantra that I teach and the most fundamental gratitude practice I teach. What we do is repeat in the mind. You can do it in line with the breath, so you're repeating each sentence on a separate out breath, or you might just repeat it in your mind. And all you're doing is wishing yourself well. There's no expectation, it's not an affirmation. It's a permission statement. saying in your mind, repeating in your mind, may I be well, may I be happy, may I find peace of mind. May I be well, may I be happy, may I find peace of mind. Just practice this for the next few minutes. I call it the self-compassion meditation. And now bringing to mind a being that brings you a warm feeling, joy or appreciation or comfort. Just a being that brings you a comfortable feeling by being around them. And you bring that being to mind, hold them in mind, and repeat in your mind, may they be well, may they be happy, may they find peace of mind, may they be well, may they be happy, may they find peace of mind. Now bring to mind a neutral person. This is somebody whose name you don't know, but who you can bring to mind. Might be the postman, it might be a neighbor, it might be a colleague, it might be someone in a local shop. And you don't know them well enough to have decided whether you like them or not. So they're neutral. You neither like them nor dislike them. to bring this neutral person to mind. Hold them in mind and say in your mind, may they be well. May they be happy. May they find peace of mind. May they be well. May they be happy. May they find peace of mind. And now bring to mind a difficult person. When we begin this practice, it's best to start with those people who are annoying, unhelpful, thoughtless, inconsiderate, rather than anybody who we believe has caused us great suffering. But in time, we can include anyone in it. But it needs to take its time as we repeat the practice. So we bring this difficult person to mind, hold them in mind, and say in our minds, may they be well, may they be happy, may they find peace of mind. May they be well, may they be happy, may they find peace of mind. And now again, bring to mind that being that brings you the warm feeling, that brings you joy. Bring them to mind and hold them in mind. And repeat in your mind, may they be well. May they be happy. May they find peace of mind. May they be well. May they be happy. May they find peace of mind. And then gently returning your attention to your surroundings.